everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you back in the saddle again, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing our program. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. Off and running on a new week after Memorial Day. It's Tuesday, May 30th, 2023. Our show in its 13th year, broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, the radio station 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. We piggyback the live feed from kvoi.com. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, real estate and property management. Without further ado, my thanks to our lineup of guest hosts who ably held down the fort while I was on my annual May vacation. Thanks to Dan Shear of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, our financial consultant, who we will hear from very shortly, Mr. Shelley Fishman. Shelley put together a couple of great shows. Jim Nintzel had a great show, as did Ben Bueller Garcia, had a couple of shows, terrific, and our travel contributor, Ryan Hansen, also had a good show, Travel Hour. Joining us now on the live line, Arizona State Senator Ken Bennett from District 1. Senator Bennett served as Arizona Secretary of State from 2009 to 2015, previously served four terms in the state Senate that included a stint as the Senate President. Senator Bennett, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Bill. How are you?
Doing well. I'm a little surprised. I was on vacation when all of this was going down, but traditionally, as you well know, it's the budget gets signed, the lawmakers adjourn, it's the end of the session. This is a little different this year, isn't it?
It was a little different. The Republican leadership decided and was able, even though we only have a one-vote majority in the House and the Senate each, we sent out kind of a continuation budget just in case we ran into problems, that there would be a budget in place to start July 1st, which is when the new state fiscal year starts. But it didn't really include a lot of the things that the governor had said in her state address. So as I and many expected, she vetoed that. But then they kind of took a different approach. And the state was sitting on kind of a large pot of one-time money, about $2.5 billion. And so they divided that up amongst each legislator and saved a chunk for the Democrats and saved a chunk for the governor's office, and kind of built the budget on one-time pork, if you want to call it that. You know, whatever each member wanted, they could identify that individually. And I wasn't very optimistic that that would end up coming together as a whole budget that the state could embrace. But sure enough, they did. So we passed a second budget, and every Republican in the legislature voted for it, and about half of the Democrats. So the governor ended up signing that, and we have a budget. And it happened in May instead of late June, like it often does, especially when you have divided government. The Republicans control the legislature very narrowly, and a Democrat governor. That's exactly the situation I had 20 years ago when I was Senate President. Janet Napolitano got elected, but we did it one way then and a different way now.
Well, let me ask you, though, was the Senate, or did the session then officially adjourn? You're on extended break right now, aren't you?
Yeah, we didn't adjourn the session after the budget was adopted. They kind of, I think they had some members who, for some silly reason, had scheduled vacations and things. and so we adjourned to the sound of the gavel, it's called, and on June 12th, we will all come back together, and it's kind of expected that there will be about a week of work to finish up some remaining bills, and the governor has several nominations to agency heads and things like that that she's wanting to get through as well, so there's a little bit of work yet to be done, but the budget is complete.
The Governor Hobbs, like you, a former Secretary of State, and she called upon you, she tapped you to be on her bipartisan election task force. You've got a pretty good relationship with the governor, don't you?
Well, I did not serve with her in the legislature, but I was Secretary of State when she was serving in the legislature. And I guess when you, since we both have been our Secretary of State, there's a bit of a commonality and a camaraderie there. So, yes, she was kind to put me on her elections integrity task force. And there's been several meetings of that group that I've been participating in. And I was very disappointed, though, that she vetoed my bipartisan election bill that we put on her desk a couple weeks ago, and she unfortunately vetoed that. So we're going to try with some parts of that, though, that I think are critical to maintaining transparency and public verifiability in our elections, which I think we desperately need going into the elections of 2024. I don't think we can afford to have another election where the loser doesn't believe they lost.
So the spending program for this new budget, how would you characterize it, Ken Bennett?
Well, I think you have to say it's a balanced budget, but you have to also acknowledge that the state was sitting on a large pot of one-time money, and that has all been committed now to be spent by the end of next year, end of next June. So, And if you go back to the last budget year of Governor Ducey, and now consider the first budget year of Governor Hobbs, 2 years ago, the state was sitting on about $4.5 billion of one-time cash balance. And between the last budget that Ducey did and the first budget now that Hobbs has signed, by the end of next year, June of next year, that one-time cash balance will be down to $7 million from $4.5 billion.
Wow.
Now, we still have $1.4 billion in the state's rainy day fund, but we really built the budgets the last couple years. This year went with me here, and I was not here last year, but the last two budgets have been significantly built on one-time money. And now that one-time money will be gone next year. And so it's going to completely revert back to the ongoing revenues that the state collects in taxes, sales taxes, and income taxes, things like that. So it's balanced, but barely.
How about education from this budget?
Education went up a little bit. Let me give you a little bit of an overview of the state's budget. The state's budget last year was about $22 billion of state funds. This year it grew a little bit to $23 billion. And of that $23 billion, K-12 education gets about 8.5 of that, and higher education gets about $2 billion of that. So by far the largest single part of the state's budget is education, and the largest within that, of course, is K-12. Health and welfare is another $5 billion. The prison and court systems, $2.5 billion, and everything else in state government is about $4.5 or $5 billion. So of the $23 billion of state money that was in this budget, education is getting about $10.5 billion of that.
How about water?
Now, There's also another $40 billion of federal and other monies that comes into the state that goes through the legislature's appropriation process. So the total spending that the state does each year is about 62-ish, $63 billion. But only about a third of that, a little over 20, is state money. And then the other two-thirds is all the federal money and stuff that comes in. So, but even then, education is the largest, followed very closely by health care.
All right. Just about out of time. Former Secretary of State Ken Bennett, current state senator. What about this talk of the desalinization plant and all that with water? A quick update on that.
That was talked about by the Water Infrastructure Finance Authority, which is a standing board. There's not enough money in their reserve funds to make that happen anytime soon, but it's an idea that was kicked around a little bit. And, you know, I think we will continue to kick around how do we solve our water problems long term, because as long as we're in this drought, it's a little precarious. But fortunately, there was a lot of snowpack up in the Rockies and Utah, Colorado, and the lakes are projected to fill up a little bit, Lake Mead and Lake Powell. So we might have gained about a year reprieve from Mother Nature or God, whichever one you believe in. But nothing long term yet to solve that issue.
All right, Ken Bennett, always good chatting with you, catching up. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, Ken Bennett, former Arizona Secretary of State, current Arizona Senator representing District Number 1. Shelley Fishman is with me in studio, and Shelley says things are, well, come see, come saw on the Wall Street scene, but Shell's got other things to talk about, and I want to hear his views on this whole debt ceiling issue that's coming up with Shelley Fishman. But I want to talk quickly about Mona's Danish Bakery. Mona's located at northeast corner Swan and Sunrise, open 6:30 in the morning, they're closed Monday. Tuesday through Saturday, open at 7 a.m. Sunday. monasdanishbakery.com is the website. Shelley Fishman's next. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And here he is, Shelley Fishman. Shelley, how are you, sir?
Well, Bill, and I would like to thank you for coming back to the States and fixing this debt limit problem for us.
Isn't that something? I come back and then, hey, there's a deal.
Pay credit.
I will give you credit. You put together two really good shows, those two university professors, two really good hours, and we're going to find a way to re-air them at some point. But good job, Shell.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a lot of fun to do.
So we have a proposed debt limit deal. There is this Freedom Caucus group that is saying no way. Is that opposition going to be enough to kill this thing?
I don't think so. I think they have counted the votes. They need about 150 Republicans in the House, and the Democrats will come up with the rest. So it's probably not a problem. The Senate worries me a little bit more than the House does because they can stall and because they'll have something about resisting a closure vote or resisting that 60 votes that they need to move the bill to the floor.
And we don't have time.
We don't have time. And they all know that we don't have time.
We don't have.
Bill, this is vintage Biden.
Hmm.
It's always at the last minute, has been for 30 years. He knows what he's going to get out of it, what he wants to get out of it. He has done, I think, a wonderful job of portraying this as you know, non-denominational.
Yeah.
It's
as nonpartisan as things can get in this day and age in D.C.
What he has done is move this problem off the table before the election.
Yes, it's will not have to be addressed until after the election.
Right. And
in 2 years.
You know, when I listened to the stuff that the Republicans wanted to do here, it was like deja vu all over again. It's the same stuff: tax reductions, reduced spending, reducing or shrinking the social contract. All of the policies that have been traditional Republican policies ever since I was a child. And we know from working the numbers that those policies just don't work as well as the more expansive policies that the Democrats have put together. We've got the statistics on that. I'm not going to run through them again.
I've done those statistics a couple of times.
Ahead of me. But,
yeah.
But what is so unraveling to my mind is this tendency to continue to try to do the same thing over and over and over again and expect different results. I'm sorry, Bill, that's the definition of insanity.
I knew you were going there.
And it just, you know, I scratch my head and think to myself, what we've got with this deal strikes me as a really good approach, a nice bipartisan approach to getting this off the table. Now they can get to the budgeting process and do this the way it's supposed to be done.
Bottom line, the economy is in pretty darn good shape, wouldn't you say?
You know, and have been saying it on this show
and have
regularly. We've got unemployment at record lows at 3.4%. We've got GDP growth three times the pace under Biden as it was under Trump. We've got real incomes rising. We've got inflation coming down, not fast enough, but for 10 consecutive months, with the exception of April, we had a tiny tick up. When you take a look at both consumer and producer price indexes, these over the past 4 or 5 months have literally been negative. So we have the budget deficit. This is interesting. I didn't even know this until I read it in an article. The budget deficit is down from 15.6% of GDP to 5.5% of GDP in just this year. So, yeah, you know, now last year was probably unfair because it was the end of the pandemic. But we have real strength. with the exception of inflation, and even inflation, which we should talk about, is far reduced. It's, you know, around twice what the Fed wants it to be, but it's down from 7-8%, maybe as much as 9%, down to 4-4.5%. So, you know, I heard Governor DeSantis, you know, saying that we were on a pathway to bankruptcy in the country before this deal, and we're still on it afterwards. That's just such utter nonsense. There is no pathway to bankruptcy. First of all, the U.S. can print money, which means it can't go bankrupt. But more importantly than that, we have a strong economy, and we are recovering from supply chain issues, from Ukraine war issues, and we're doing it at a pace that nobody expected. We have an employment figure today that has actually reached the levels that we thought it was going to be this year before the pandemic. So, you know, this gloom and doom stuff. Now, it is true we have an increasing deficit. We don't know how big the deficit can grow before it gets to be a real problem. We think it's, you know, some percentage of GDP in the area of about 110% of GDP. We're not near that yet. So let's step back from all the gloom and doomers and the Schadenfreude people and say, wait a second, we've got a strong economy. We don't have radicals who are in control, though some of them on both sides would like to be. And we have a general population in the U.S. that is coming through this pandemic, coming through inflation, and can't spend money fast enough. It's really bizarre. You take a look at the travel figures for this past weekend, off the charts.
Yeah.
You take a look at consumer spending.
Back to 2019 levels,
exactly.
Pre-pandemic levels.
Exactly. So even though everybody says when you interview them, well, you know, there are some problems and we're not sure how strong the economy is, when you dig a little bit deeper into those interviews, you find out that the public at large is being spooked by the politicians. But when you ask about how their budgets are working out and how their spending is and how they view their own personal economics, if you will, you know, family economics, they come out with, oh, no, we're okay. It's these other guys we worry about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, just coming through many airports, over the last couple of weeks, everybody is traveling. Planes are packed, airports right. Just, you know, wall-to-wall right. People.
And take a look at the stock markets.
Yep.
I mean, take a look at, well, the NASDAQ just won't stop. I mean,
no.
You know, the NASDAQ's up 12-13% for the year. The S&P is up about 7-8% for the year. The Dow is having a little bit of problems this year because specific companies within that Dow 30 are having a little bit of trouble. But even the Dow is up a tiny bit mm-hmm. for the year. Mm-hmm. So at a time when we're coming off a very good year last year for the markets, the forward-looking investment community is saying, you know, look at the numbers. The numbers are giving us a strong signal that we're going to have good profits this year. We're going to have a slower economy, probably, I believe, won't go into recession. But the other thing that's happening is a little bit scary. Companies, even though their cost of goods are coming down, are not reducing their prices. So you've got a little bit of price gouging going on. But even that, I think, as people begin to react to those price increases, that pressure, though it'll lag a little bit, that pressure to bring prices down will be in a pretty significant.
So the next inflationary, well, we've got the Fed. Could this be the month, the next session, when they say, I guess June they'll meet?
Yeah.
Yeah, and say maybe no rate increase.
I think that's likely. That's what the market is pricing in.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Fed has now done the raising of interest rates that they said was their target. And now, hopefully, they will sit back and watch the economy kind of react to all of that increases. I don't think we're going to get a decrease, maybe not this year. But you know, the housing market is badly affected. There's always that unintended consequence for the banking segment. But you know, the soft landing that we talk about looks more encouraging, or I'm more encouraged that that will be the result than, and I've been optimistic for a long time, but I think that you're just looking over the horizon, that you know, maybe Jay Powell has got this under control.
We shall see. So overall, things looking pretty good.
Overall, I think things are looking pretty good. There's always, you know, anytime you look into the future, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
The war in Ukraine could go bad. Something, you
got
know,
a big
unexpected.
Big offensive that is planned in Ukraine.
Right.
We'll see how that goes. But, yeah.
But if things go along the track that they've been going for the past 2 years, you know, I would say that the economy is going to come out of this year still on a positive, though a less positive note than it, you know, we'd like to see it, and then continue the recovery next year.
All right, Shelley Fishman. Shell, thanks for the sitting in for a couple of shows, and see you next Tuesday.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Buckmaster back in the saddle again. My first show back on the air here live in about 3 weeks. So good to be back and talking about what's going on in Tucson. And we'll be talking with our UA climate scientist, Dr. Zach Guido, in a moment. But first, I want to talk about Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Perfect time of year to do some planting. It hasn't gotten excessively hot, which we've been very lucky. So it's a perfect time of year to put in some color in the garden and some things that will survive until the rainy season. And we'll find out from Dr. Guido. We'll get his prediction about monsoon 2023 in a moment. Green Things, their website, greenthingsaz.com, and their sister business, zocalovillage.com, for the beautiful items imported from Mexico, like their Talavera pottery. Dr. Zach Guido is the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. Dr. Guido is an assistant research professor at the Arizona Institute for Resilience. The acronym there is appropriate, AIR, which coordinates interdisciplinary groups of faculty, students, and projects across the University of Arizona's campus, from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water resources, and beyond. Hey, Zach, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Well-traveled, Dr. Zach Guido, his first kind of round-the-world trip. He had business in Bangladesh. And then to get to Bangladesh, which is kind of from Tucson, it's like halfway around the world. So you might as well keep on going. So that was quite a grind for you, wasn't it?
The travel there is difficult, but the country is really intriguing, and we're, you know, looking at the places, deals with a lot of floods. And so we look at how rural, you know, societies and community are dealing with floods and whatnot. So it was great fun. Met some great people. And you know, science is collaborative. So we travel. Unfortunately, I think that's we take a little bit of the greenhouse gas hit for our flights. But it is really great to be able to explore the world and see how other people live and whatnot. So
they have a population of 100 million, something like that. And is there anybody that lives over there on what you could call solid ground? I mean, most of it is basically they have built a country on floodplains. And the problem is it's always flooding. They've got the major river that really comes from the runoff from the Himalayas.
Yeah, so I just started working there, and you know, we've always heard of Bangladesh as being sort of ground zero for climate change. Obviously, yeah. The flooding and the sea level rise and the population density, it's the most densely populated place on Earth. But I was just struck by, I mean, these are huge rivers, and the people, they intensely use the land. There's people everywhere, and they're on these floodplains. And how they deal with it, and they've dealt with it for, you know, thousands of years probably, is they, you can see these flat areas, and then their houses are sort of elevated, you know, four or five feet above the flat areas to so that they're on dry ground. Of course, the problem is when there is a lot of rain, and there's other water issues too. Like there's part of the river in the northern area, part of the rivers start in India. So there's binational water management issues. But when there is a flood, and large floods, they can crest over where people have their elevated houses, and that creates quite a bit of hardship.
When we were in one of the places, Puerto Rico, and traditionally, as you know, because you've spent time in Jamaica, I don't know if you spent any time in Puerto Rico, but normally the rainy season begins when the hurricane season begins. Not this year. I have been many places in the Caribbean. I've never seen Puerto Rico look as green, that island, as it has. One of our flights coming over from St. Martin, we flew into they had 3 inches of rain in 45 minutes at the airport, and we landed just as that was ending. You talk about a scary flight, my goodness. But what I'm getting to is, with the climate change, the way things are happening, their rains came very early this year. Normally it's after June 1st, when the kind of coinciding with the hurricane season, they're getting a ton of rain on Puerto Rico.
Yeah, that's interesting. I actually do work in Puerto Rico, so I'm familiar with the geography there. And
yeah,
just the 3 inches of rain, I mean, imagine like what we get here in Tucson during the monsoon. Is a big event would be a half an inch or maybe an inch. Mm-hmm. Like a few times we get 2 inches, and these are massive downpours. It's hard to imagine really 3 inches, but it's probably more common there. It's a tropical place. Yeah, and I think to your question, I mean, one of the observations that has been made, virtually in a lot of different places globally, is just like the sort of normal bounds of seasonal weather is shifting. It's a little bit more unpredictable. I mean, I've done studies with coffee farmers in Jamaica and maize farmers in Zambia and Kenya, and they all say the same thing. It's mm-hmm. the onset of the rainy season is more unpredictable. You know, there's a little bit of memory bias in that, but the data is also bearing that out in some places, that the patterns are slightly changing.
And then coming home, while I was away, bringing all of this home, we had here kind of what some characterized as like an early monsoon.
Oh, yeah, a couple weeks ago. It was, some people made that comment. It was not the monsoon.
No.
It had a totally different atmospheric pattern, which I could talk about.
Mm-hmm.
It's not predictive of, a good monsoon this year, but it was unusual, not unprecedented, for an event, a May event in Tucson. I think I went back and, Tucson Airport received, I think, over a, basically in 1 day, but I think it overlapped into 2 days, close to a half an inch of rain, which was nice because it bumped the totals up above average. If you go back into May over history, I think there's 73 years of data, something like that, at the airport. The number of times in which May had received more than a half an inch of rain was about 9.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's one of the, face it, it's one of the driest months.
May, it is.
May and June here are dry,
yeah,
normally.
Right. So the point of that, I think there's 2 points of that.
Yeah.
One, it's uncommon
mm-hmm.
to have a May event,
yes,
but it's not unprecedented.
Right.
And I think, what was it in 2019, mm-hmm. was it?
We had some rain in May.
Yeah, if I'm remembering correctly.
You're right.
Actually, a really large event that dropped, I think, an inch of rain at the
mm-hmm.
airport.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and we'll take it, of course, in terms of, like, just adding more moisture to the landscape, and sort of love any rain that we can get.
And if you take away that one kind of anomaly, the one day where we hit 100, it's very similar to kind of last year. We had, there was like, it hit 100 for 1 hour last April. And then kind of similar thing happened this year. But if you take away that one day, and we've had 1 day of 100. I think we'll have a chance maybe early next week. But so we're actually, if you do take away that 1 day, we would be a little late for hitting 100.
Yeah, and that's true. And then if you look at the forecast, this is mm-hmm. really interesting. And it relates to our winter, and I can talk mm-hmm. about this in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the forecast for June, they're calling for below average temperatures, which mm-hmm. is...
I'll take that.
Yeah, it's not something that we receive every year because
no.
we're in, June is one of the fastest warming months in
mm-hmm.
our calendar.
Mm-hmm.
The sort of forecast for below average temperatures are in part related to, I think, the wet winter where
mm-hmm.
we had a pretty big snowpack across the
mm-hmm.
West.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the snowpack conditions, mid-May, the latest data, there's a lot of stations that still have snowpack. Now, I'm talking sort of Utah, Colorado, California, mm-hmm. Arizona, and New Mexico. And we received, obviously, we've talked about this before, just a tremendous amount of snow this winter. And that evaporation that is occurring, that moisture on the landscape is leading to some evaporative cooling and just a delayed progression of a high pressure ridge that really sort of brings in the heat.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an expectation looking at the models for below average June temperatures, which makes me happy on the one hand. And on the other hand, it does sort of hint at
maybe a delayed monsoon.
A delayed monsoon.
And we'll talk about that in our next segment with UA climate scientist Dr. Zach Guido. We'll pick up on that, and then we'll also talk about, it's been all over the news, a big El Nino is looming, what that means. So those two items will be covered in our next segment with Dr. Zach Guido. It's Buckmaster on a Tuesday. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. They had a big weekend over in Silver City. It was their annual blues festival. Heard it went very well. Great time of year to get over to Silver City. Only about a 3-hour drive. And you will be in a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment, about a 5,000-foot elevation. That translates this time of year into at least 10 degrees cooler for the high in Silver City. So look for a great place to get away and cool off. Their website is southwestnewmexico.org, where to stay, what to do, and even where to eat. all there on the website. Dr. Zach Guido, we love having Dr. Zach Guido on the show because I'm kind of a, not only am I a travel hobbyist, I'm a weather hobbyist as well. So I love talking climate with Dr. Guido, who is an assistant research professor at the University of Arizona specializing in climate. So as advertised, there are two items I want to talk about. We'll pick up on maybe a late summer rainy season, i.e. monsoon, because as we've talked about over the years, Zach, you really need some really hot temperatures to kind of fire up our monsoon.
Yeah, and like it's a regional feature. And so what ends up happening is you get this march northward as the northern hemisphere moves in the summer. You get this march northward of a high pressure dome, mm-hmm. high pressure dome. And as that moves north of us, we actually come under easterly flow. And so that position of the ridge is really important. And then you get sort of clockwise movement of air around that high pressure system and moisture and air from the south come into our region, and it brings water vapor in, and then mm-hmm. with the heat you can generate these convective storms. So the position of that ridge is really important. So we need that position to set up north of us. And when you have what we were talking about before the break, mm-hmm. When you have a lot of snow on the landscape, a lot of soil moisture, that sort of evaporative cooling, lower temperatures can kind of delay that march northward of the ridge. And a lot of the models that sort of forecast this, I should caveat this mm-hmm, a little bit mm-hmm. by saying that forecasting the monsoon is really, really challenging. But these big, sophisticated numerical climate models are all sort of picking up on a delayed start.
Mid-July.
Yeah, I don't. That sort of resolution isn't there.
I'm thinking yeah. July 14th. yeah. No, I've into my crystal ball. No, mid July might work.
Yeah, historically in Tucson, for example, the onset is around July 1st, July 4th. Mm-hmm. So some sort of delay. It wouldn't surprise me if the monsoon came in on time. But looking at those models, like I tend to look for consistency across the different ones, mm-hmm. and they're all sort of saying something similar. They're a little bit of a black box. It's hard to figure out what exactly they're keying into, but they're all sort of seeing something similar, and it's a sort of drier signal. And usually when you have a delayed onset, you end up having a below average monsoon season mm-hmm. just because you take off 2 weeks
yep.
of time in which rain can fall.
Mm-hmm.
So there's also a little bit of a wild card in this forecast, which is, and you sort of talked about this before with the emerging El Nino. When we have an El Nino forming, El Nino events tend to bring increased activity, tropical cyclone activity in the eastern Pacific.
Yes, because of the warming of the Pacific Ocean under the influence of El Nino. So we may have an early tropical event.
Right. And so that can, in the latter half of the monsoon season, I mean, it's possible we get a recurving remnant tropical storm that really changes sort of the overall statistics of our monsoon season. So there's a couple things that at play. If you asked for my... Mm-hmm. Or you insinuated mm-hmm. that I was going to give a prediction, and I don't like to predict the monsoon.
Go ahead, take a shot.
But if I was, I guess if I was mm-hmm. Betting on it, I would probably think it was going to be a little bit of a delayed below average monsoon season. But I got my fingers crossed.
Do you have that event going on, that game, pick the monsoon this year, or was that a one and done?
Yeah, we did it 2 years in a row.
2 years. Two
yeah,
years
we had sort of a fantasy monsoon forecasting game. It was great fun, yeah. But, you know, decided to pause
that. Ran its course. You know, I hope it's not a late one because, as I recall, July 20th is kind of the latest when our summer rainy season really begins. So you start to get in that, and then it gets chancy for kind of good rainfall totals.
Yeah. I mean, July 20th would be a really bummer. I'm thinking back, like, so we had the last 2 years were just exceptional.
Very productive.
And then the year before that, it was like
horrible.
Doomsday. Yeah. And I don't remember. And I think like mid-July was when the monsoon sort of set up. But it's not just when it comes in. It's like, you know, how frequent and that sort of thing. It's the prediction of the sort of day-to-day weather is not something that we can know at this lead time. Sort of the seasonal character is a little bit more favorable for a forecast, but even that is extremely difficult. But like I said, like there are some indications that are pointing toward maybe a suppressed monsoon, at least initially. And, you know, just by chance, like it's hard to envision three monsoon seasons, really productive monsoon seasons back to back to back. So
the odds of that are very low.
It seems like it, yeah.
So getting back to what is being called a big El Nino, we were in kind of a neutral state there for a couple of seasons, weren't we?
Well, we actually had three
La Ninas
in a row. And that's happened, I think, once or twice before in the past, but it's very unusual. And you know, we tend to be at the El Nino, La Nina events tend to be a winter phenomenon. So summertime is the tropical Pacific Ocean is sort of transitioning to one side or the other, or maybe it just stays in the middle. So it's sort of like there's a neutral, and then a warming of the Pacific is an El Nino. Eastern Pacific is an El Nino, and a cooling of the Eastern Pacific is a La Nina. And all indications right now are that we're transitioning into an El Nino event. The ultimate magnitude of that is not known at the moment. Some of the models are picking up on sort of a moderate event. I would say it's more centered around a moderate event, but it can still go either way. It's very unlikely for it to be another La Nina, but it could potentially be a neutral or an El Nino. And then what that would mean for us in the Southwest. I talked a little bit about the hurricane cyclone and the Pacific that affects us. We also tend to see just general winter rainfall here in the Southwest being a little bit above average. Mm-hmm. So that might be the flip side to potentially a dry monsoon season. And then there's also a global temperature expression. There was a lot of news out a week ago or so by the World Meteorological Organization just talking about the likelihood that one of the next 5 years will crest that magical 1.5 degree Celsius global average temperature sort of threshold that has been part of these international climate negotiations for a while. And that we tend to see as the warming of the tropical Pacific sort of gives off heat, gives some of that warm ocean gives off heat toward the atmosphere. We tend to see the year after a spike in global average temperatures. And I would just put that in a little bit of context is the warmest years on record have been about 1.1 to 1.2, depending on sort of how you're calculating your baseline. 1.1, 1.2 degrees Celsius above average, and we're talking about 1.5, so a considerably higher global average temperature. And that obscures a little bit too the spatial patterns, like the Arctic. You know, last year the Arctic
horrible
was
warming
over 4
horrible
degrees Celsius above average.
Yeah. All right, Dr. Zach Guido, I could talk all day with you about climate, but we do have to wrap it up, and we will catch up with you after we get into the summer rainy season, see where we are going with it. Zach, safe travels. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line for our telephone interviews is presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. On behalf of Dr. Guido and John on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster saying have a great afternoon.